welcome to the Total Soccer Show and our Euro 2020 coverage. Day four. Scotland's balance sits at zero because the Czechs bounce. It's a victory at Hampden Park. Slovakia poleaxed Robert Lewandowski and co in St. Petersburg. And Spain bring the pain as they drained the life force out of anybody who sat through their opener against Sweden. My name is Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, we have a man who has much to say about the loose-fitting jorts worn by Slovakia's fans, Taylor Rockwell.
Hello. It was nice to see the fans in the stand. And then as they kind of lingered on that group of Slovakian fans, I did sort of notice they were all wearing like JNCO jeans that had been cut off at the shin. It was an interesting approach to fashion, is what I'm saying.
I think you've had a classic example of cultural insensitivity here, Taylor. I hate to tell you, Slovakians are never nudes. They do tend to wear jean shorts of varying types. So I hope we can clear that up and we can move on from this.
I apologize. I didn't know that. There are dozens of us, so I should have known better. And there were probably dozens of fans there. So yeah, that makes sense.
Indeed, there were. Joining Taylor and I, we have a man who's like Alvaro Morata because he doesn't need girls to have a good time. It's Joseph Lowry.
That's a good thing and also very true for my own personal soccer career. Ryan, you're spot on.
And joining us, of course, we have a man who has plenty of points, unlike his national team. I'm sorry, Graham Ruthven.
Ryan, I don't even have the energy, I'm afraid. Sigh is all I've got to say. Sigh.
I've enjoyed the Scotland teasing up to this point, but now I just feel a bit mean. Do you need a hug, Graham? I'm sorry.
Yes, I do need a hug, but they're still not legal here, so that'll have to wait as well.
That's just a Scottish thing, not a COVID thing, right?
Yeah, nothing to do with COVID, yeah. Just in normal times, hugs are not legal in Scotland. Any sort of physical emotion or, not allowed here.
As we understand from your wedding story with your polite handshake with your spouse.
Yes, indeed.
Well, not many polite handshakes at Hampden Park for Scotland, who lost 2-0 to the Czech Republic. To paraphrase Jamie Vardy, Czech chic get banged. Had to say that very carefully, Graham. Let's hear a little bit about your thoughts on the performance, Graham, from Scotland. Obviously, we had two goals from Patrick Schick, who sunk the Scottish team and sunk a lot of their hopes because a lot was riding on this game, wasn't it?
Why can't we have nice things, Ryan? Maybe the curse isn't actually over and this is just the start of an even crueler curse against Scotland. Certainly felt like that a little bit. When the team news came out, that's really when the point of deflation started. I was really deflated before kickoff when it emerged that Kieran Tierney is injured, which I think I said in yesterday's podcast that if he was getting to the byline and bombing on and carry the ball forward, then things were going well for Scotland. Well, he wasn't doing that today because he was watching from home injured. And really, he's the one player that Scotland can't do without. We don't have another player like him who can play in on the left side of the back three like him, who can bring the ball out. That was a major, major problem today, particularly in the first half. Liam Cooper and Grant Hanley being tasked with bringing the ball out for Scotland, and it just wasn't happening at all. So that was the first point, the first sign that things weren't going well. The fact that Che Adams didn't start was a weird one for me, given that all the signs had pointed to him probably starting alongside Dykes. All the kind of warm-up games, they'd been testing that out. It had been going well. So that was peculiar for me as well. And with Tierney out, I thought that this might be the perfect game for McTominay to go back into centre-back, which he has actually played there more often than not for Scotland recently. And as weird as this seemed, it seems we had Tierney on the left side of the back three and McTominay on the right. And the idea of that was to have two players who could bring the ball out. So to have Tierney out and then not have McTominay in central defence felt really strange. And in all the things I considered about this match maybe panning out, one thing I hadn't considered was Steve Clarke getting the big decisions wrong, and I'm afraid he did today. That's really one of the big conclusions I can draw from this.
So let's explore that a little more, Graham, with the squad selections and what went down for Scotland. But just before we do that, can we get a bit of greater context? You're in Glasgow. You're not far from the stadium where this game took place. I don't know if you've left your house today or you've spoken to many of your countrymen and country people. I don't know how to say that, but
country persons.
What is the mood? What is your feeling? This is Scotland's first tournament appearance since 1998. It's been a long time coming. You've said you feel a little bit deflated. Is there a bit of a national mood at the moment?
Yes and no. I mean, today was really like something I've never experienced before in my adult life. Anyway, that the greatest gauge I have is the building site outdoors outside my house has been silent all day. There's been nobody there, and I think that has been a little bit of a national thing where there was a petition for all the school kids today to be able to watch the game, and that was a thing that was not enforced, but it was allowed by the Scottish government. It was the school kids to be able to watch the game. I sent my daughter to nursery today in her little Scotland kit, forgetting that it was actually daycare pictures day. And they messaged me a couple hours later to say, are these the clothes you want her in for these pictures?
Yes,
it was entirely intentional. No, it wasn't. I had completely forgotten about that. But yeah, it was. To be honest, even though the result was obviously disappointing, and I think now it would be revisionism of me to say, oh, you know, we can still get through, because all the way through I've said that we really need to win this first game. So I think now we know that we're just here to pretty much enjoy ourselves, I think. Having said all that, the thing that I'll remember about today in this game is just the way that everyone has got swept up in it, and how seeing the kind of the fans in the stands at Hampden, given everything that's happened in the last year, that's the first time there's been a significant number of fans in a Scottish stadium for well over a year. And so seeing all that, and I did tear up a little bit at the national anthem, which I have never done before in my life. It was, yeah, that those are the things I'll actually remember about this rather than the performance and the result.
So let's talk about the Steve Clarke's decisions then, perhaps about his selections, because you say Che Adams didn't start and we had Billy Gilmore on the bench. I was looking at when the team came out and I was thinking, there's almost a half-decent 11 on the bench.
Yeah, yeah. I think what Steve Clarke went for was safety, caution, security and experience and age, which is not the way that I... In this game in particular, you could maybe understand it if you go into the last game and you need a point or something to go through, and you could maybe understand it in that instance. But this was a game where Scotland needed to be proactive and actually take the game to Czech Republic. And one of the most frustrating things is, I think in the second half, once he corrected things a little bit and Che Adams came on, and Scott McTominay, even though I don't think he was playing centre-back as such, but he was dropping much deeper to pick up the ball and bring it out, things were looking a lot better at the start of the second half, and I was quite confident that Scotland could get an equalising goal. But then obviously the thing that pops the bubble again is the goal from 49.7 yards, which is the furthest distance a goal has ever been scored on record at the European Championships since they started recording those things in 1980. And of course that would happen against Scotland. Of course that would be against us. But yeah, everything just... I mean, look, well, we brought a lot of it on ourselves with some of the decisions, and some of the performances as well weren't good enough, but it did feel like a lot kind of went against us.
That goal came at the wrong time for me, Graham. I felt like it was a point where Scotland could have maybe got the equaliser and got back into it a little bit. And they did play quite well for certain spates of this game, I would say. Are we buying into the narrative that of Dave Marshall being poorly positioned for that goal? Because for me, it was a superb strike, a wonderful curl on it. And you know, Schick's taken half a second, less than half a second to make that decision. It wasn't like David Beckham back in the 90s where he's looked up, he's taken 3 or 4 seconds before trying to catch the keeper off the line. That was a much faster transition and decision he's made there. So I'm not sure I quite buy into the blame game.
So Marshall is the one who's catching a lot of heat in Scotland for that, for his positioning. And what's happening is they're freezing the play when Schick takes the shot. And if you freeze it there, it obviously looks like Marshall is way, way too high up the pitch. He's, you know, there's only about 10, 15 yards between Schick and Marshall actually on the pitch when he takes the shot. But I personally think that's a really unfair time to freeze the play, and the fair time to freeze it would be when Henry takes the shot about between 20 and 25 yards out on the edge of the box. That's where Marshall is basing his positioning on, and at that point he's not even, he's just at the edge of the centre circle in his own half. So I feel like that is a pretty common place for a goalkeeper to be. You could argue about Jack Henry maybe getting a bit overexcited and not realising that there's not really a defence behind him. He is obviously one of the centre-backs. But again, in Jack Henry's defence, he scored a goal from pretty much that position against the Netherlands last week in a warm-up game. He hit the bar from outside the box earlier in this game. So I almost feel like he's a little bit entitled to take on a shot as well. Maybe a bit of position on naivety. I understand that. And if there is a mistake, it's with him, not with Marshall. I do think Marshall is being scapegoated a little bit, to be honest.
Joe, XG took a pounding today. Scotland had a 2.31 XG. The Czech Republic had 0.91 in this one. What were your thoughts on this game?
Well, first of all, yeah, you're right, Ryan. It's a good reminder that single game XG is risky to cite and to use. You have to use it carefully because there's so many varied things. We'll talk about Spain and Sweden later. Spain won the XG battle, but obviously they didn't score a goal. So there will be that variance from time to time. This game to me felt like what would happen, or at least large parts of it felt like what would happen if the Red Bulls, the New York Red Bulls and Barnsley played, but without the pressing. And it's just long ball, which is just code for 90s British soccer, by the way.
Yay!
And it was long ball after long ball, 50-50 ball, 50-50 ball. And for a while, Scotland were playing the ball forward and trying to count on, at least as I saw it, trying to count on Dykes to bring it down and then play forward. And it just wasn't working for the first stretch of the first half. Then they started to be able to move forward a little bit more from those long balls. And then in the second half, especially after going down 2-0, they started to actually play a little bit more. And I can understand Graham talking about moving McTominay back into the back line to help progress the ball. But, I mean, the way the Czech Republic approached this game, I don't think Scotland really could have progressed the ball much without making some positional adjustments, let alone personnel adjustments. Czech Republic had their number 10, Darida, constantly on McTominay. They sometimes push Kral up out of their midfield in their 4-2-3-1 to step to McTominay as well and just really discourage him and the rest of Scotland's midfielders from getting on the ball. I think it was a smart game plan from the Czech Republic. And then in the second half, we saw some good adjustments from Scotland to get on the ball a little bit more and be able to play some in possession. But by the time you go down 2-0, it's really hard to come back from that.
One of the things that was most bizarre about the team selection was the back three or the back five, whichever way you want to look at it for Scotland, was devised by Clark for two things. It was devised primarily to get Robertson and Tierney into the same team. It was also devised to mask a deficiency that we have in terms of our centre-backs. We don't have many centre-backs at international level, and those we do have, I don't think are very good anyway. So with Tierney out, the need, necessity for that back three or back five is completely gone. Why would you play the back five? Because then all of a sudden, rather than playing two centre backs, which is already a weak position for Scotland, you're then playing three. We're having to find a third centre back who's maybe not good enough for this level to come into that team. It was a really strange one for me, and I really hope Tierney's back for the England game. Clark said that he has a chance of being back for that game, because with Tierney out, this Scotland team becomes really, really different. We become a bit of a long ball team, feed off the scraps. And with Tierney in the team, we are much more dynamic. Our game's all about overloads. And I really like Scotland as a team with Tierney in it, but he makes such a massive difference. And that was clear in this performance.
Taylor, you've been quieter than a Scottish building site for the last few minutes. Your thoughts on this game?
I mean, I think Graham has summed it up really well. So too Joe. I thought Joe's tactical points were dead on, that like as the second half begins, it seemed like Scotland had at least renewed vigor, if not changing things up like from a fundamental level. And they do start to cause those problems. There is that great sort of backpedaling save from Vasilik that maybe could have been an own goal, but instead he palms it over. And it seemed like Scotland were starting to get a bit more confidence and a bit more sort of confidence in their own attacking ability. And I do think, to Graham's point, that is why Marshall is so high up the field, is because you're pushing on, you're trying to make something happen. You want your goalkeeper up for that long clearance so that you're not wasting time. The thing that I kept going back to during the Spain game was how, like, Graham, I don't know if this is going to be enough of a like silver lining for you, but let's hope Scotland keep going to these competitions. But this game, in retrospect, felt like a lack of tournament experience coming home to roost for Scotland, starting with the sort of adjustments that had to be made or weren't made that should have been made to the lineup, to the tactical approach. But then even contrasting Scotland's defensive display with Sweden, where Sweden never really like left themselves vulnerable, that even when they would attack, they still had everybody where they needed to be. And that's where you're right. It's harsh to put it on Hendry, but would Sweden have sent Lindelof charging forward 30 yards? And if you look at the tactics cam, it's even more damning because there is just so much open space behind him. No one could have seen that deflection going the way it did, or the block, I should say, going the way it did. But I think that's the difference for me, is that you don't have that sort of big game experience to go back to. Sweden do from a number of different competitions. And so I guess my optimistic thought for Scotland would be that keep qualifying, you get more of that experience, and then it becomes maybe second nature. And my final thing would just be that Graham's saying, now we're just here to have fun. I'm wondering how long before kickoff of the England game does he go back to, no, we got to win this one. This well, really matters, because I know that's coming.
That was going to be my exact follow-up question for Graham. We want to let him park the memory of this game soon, but he did say he was quietly confident about Friday, but yesterday. So what have you reassessed at all, Graham?
A little bit, yeah, because I keep going back to it, and I apologize for keep going back to it, but if Tierney doesn't play that game, I'm not very hopeful at all. I think it'll be a little bit of a back to the wall job for a 0-0. I will say if Scotland somehow get a point out of that game, then you reassess a little bit, because I've always thought 4 points would probably, and I don't know this for certain because obviously you don't know how the other groups are going to pan out, but I've always thought 4 points would probably be enough to get Scotland through as one of the third place teams. So if Scotland get a point against England, all of a sudden it's Croatia at home, and having seen Croatia against England, I don't think that's the most daunting task in the world, even though they would probably be slight favourites still. But at this point, yeah, I think it would be revisionism on my part to change my tune, especially after such a poor performance. I think we are here now to kind of, at most, I'm going along with what Taylor's saying, at most gain some tournament experience. I found out today that as a combined unit, Scotland have the fewest caps of any team at this tournament. And that kind of goes in, that aligns with what Taylor was saying there. I didn't know that until today.
Well, Graham is pinning the hopes of Scotland on one player. And speaking of another team who pinned their hopes on one player, we're going to be talking about Poland right after these messages.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Total Soccer Show, we are back with our Euro 2020 Day 4 Roundup. We are heading to St. Petersburg to talk about Poland against Slovakia. This one, probably the first upset result of the tournament, 2-1 to Slovakia. This game, by the way, was meant to be in Dublin. There was a 30,000 crowd expected in St. Petersburg. I didn't count them out. It didn't seem like there was that many in the stadium. But this one, real Monday night football stuff. Eagles versus Falcons in this one. Fun fact for you. These two teams do share a border, quite a significant border. But talking to my imaginary friend from Slovakia this morning, surprised me to learn there's very little animosity between these two nations, and indeed between many of the Slavic nations. Robert Lewandowski, I'm told, is a hero in Slovakia, because the two most supported teams, I am told, are Barcelona and Bayern Munich. So he's a big hero. He's a big hero for the Slavic people. So interesting that there wasn't more sort of heat behind this one. But Joe, a huge, huge win for Slovakia here against 10-man Poland, who the Slovakians seem to take advantage of pretty bad defending on both goals, I'd say. There was a avoidable red card for Krakowiak, and Slovakia seemed to sit pretty deep at the end, and they held on very well.
They did. This game for me was, I guess I kind of turn every game into this. I try not to, but this game I think was a really interesting tactical battle. And Taylor, I'll let you talk more about the way Slovakia set up, because I know you tweeted about it, and it was just very interesting how they approached this game. But the general flow early on was Poland controlling the ball, and they were in this really strange 3-1-5-1 shape, three diamond wingback striker. I mean, they were in this really weird three at the back shape that had Robert Lewandowski isolated on his own. Without Arkadiusz Milik in this team, it kind of makes sense as to why that happened. You had Zielinski playing kind of as a number 10, but also floating a little bit to one side or the other. You had Krakowiak anchoring that midfield, and then a pair of central midfielders to either side of him, but pushed up high. So Poland was in this really strange structure, and then Slovakia was defending in this man-oriented kind of way. Wherever Poland's midfielders would go, they would follow for the most part. Wherever Robert Lewandowski would go or Zielinski would drop, they would follow. And it made it hard for the first half for Poland to actually get any time to think and to move the ball and to break through that lower defensive shape that Slovakia had. And then the second half starts up, and Poland grabbed that equalizer with some really great off-ball movement. And that's how you beat some man-oriented defending, is you have these purposeful off-ball runs. And they had one from Rebus in that moment, the left wing back in their shape. And it looked like Poland was going to come back and really threaten to take the lead. And then they go down to 10, and then they go down a goal, and it's done.
So, Joe, on that formation that Poland had, it was kind of crazy whatever was going on with the way the players were positioned. You mentioned sort of two pairs of midfielders on either side. Were they inspired by the Dutch, just leaving a hole in the middle?
I mean, there are certainly similarities, right, with how these two teams approached the game. They both went with a back three. There were open spaces in midfield from time to time. I think Poland had a more cohesive defensive structure than the Dutch did, but I'm not going to lie, Ryan, there are some similarities.
Taylor,
yes, sir.
Let's hear a bit about your thoughts about Poland. I'm interested in your thought on the left wing back, Puhacz. They introduced a Puhacz at the back. Have you ever seen a Puhacz like that, Taylor?
No, a Puhacz that was kind of all over the place and did a lot of different tasks, even though you would have assumed he was put on to do one specific one. Well done, Puhacz. I wouldn't say well done overall to Poland, as Ryan has already sort of indicated, I think, because this did feel like the type of game in which they had a specific game plan designed to cause confusion for their opponent, and Slovakia seemed to have predicated their game plan on thriving under chaos and thus having a lot of fluidity and moving all over the place and tracking runners. And I think Poland, at the same time, struggled with their defensive game plan because I think the way they could have gotten more out of it, and really when they did start to get more out of this game in the second half, is when they committed their fullbacks forward, which allowed their wide attackers to go much more central so that Robert Lewandowski had more bodies around him. But for the most part, at least in the first half, they didn't want to commit those fullbacks forward because they were so afraid of being hit on the break, because Slovakia would sit very deep at times. And so then you had this disconnect in what they were trying to do. And even when they would get possession further up the field, there wasn't enough in terms of running numbers off the ball to make anything happen for Poland. And I think that is very much to Slovakia's credit. I don't know what will happen with them in the rest of the competition because, strangely, I think Sweden will be just as defensive as they were against Spain. I don't know how what Slovakia did today matches up against a very defensive team. And then that would leave Slovakia versus Spain as the final game. And who knows what will happen there if Slovakia can frustrate or if their game plan doesn't work against a team that will pass and pass and possess and possess. But on this day, I thought them being in a 4-3-3 at times, a 4-4-2 at times, a 4-2-4 if they wanted to press a little bit further up the field in a mid-block. But then they would go 5-3-2 and have sort of numbers across the back, and sometimes even a 6-3-1 if they needed that full line of defenders to make sure that they covered the channels but also still had numbers in the middle. I thought the way they just moved around and interchanged and nobody was necessarily doing one specific thing and the whole team was rooted around that the way I would say Poland sort of were, I think it left a lot of opportunities for Slovakia and significantly fewer opportunities for Poland.
Graham, your thoughts on this one? We lest we forget that Poland did have a lot of injuries here, not least Milik, who wasn't fit for this one, not indeed fit for this tournament. Is he their Tierney in some ways?
Well, maybe. It seems to follow a familiar pattern with Poland at major tournaments. We said in our previews that Poland just have a way of underwhelming, and even when they seem to get on top of this match at the start of the second half, then there's the Krakowiak red cards. I think they did miss someone else to take a little bit of the focus away from Lewandowski, whether that's Milik or Piątek, who obviously is normally involved with the national team. But yeah, I think Slovakia did an excellent job of generally keeping Lewandowski quiet. I know he plays a role in the equaliser and drawing a defender away from the goal scorer, but I did note that and this is from Duncan Alexander on Twitter earlier today. He says Robert Lewandowski remains one goal behind Nicholas Bentner in major international tournament goals. That is not ideal for him, I have to say.
Yeah, and I really do feel for Poland because of the injury to Milik. And then I do think if you are Sweden or Spain, you want to watch those, 17 minutes from the start of the second half until that red card. Because if Krakowiak stays on and Poland gain the confidence that they seem to have gained, it's 1-1 at that point, they are pressing on, they do seem to be penning Slovakia back a bit more, there's a world in which this finishes 2-3-1 to Poland, and it's a much more optimistic result. And I think some of the adjustments Poland made to start the second half did cause Slovakia problems and would have caused further problems, especially with kind of just being more aggressive with their numbers and getting balls into the box. And so if you're Sweden, you might watch the opening minutes of that first half or second half, and see some opportunities there that you can replicate and then try not to get a red card, because that really was the breaking moment, I think, for Poland.
Yeah, and maybe a controversial red card, the second yellow, some people debating whether it was warranted or not. Joe, Taylor touched on Slovakia's fluidity and what they did. I was more impressive than I thought I'd be, let's put it that way. I didn't have very high expectations of them. Didn't really start with a recognised striker on the field, I don't think. And we said in the previews that Milan Skriniar was very, very important to this team, and he was indeed important, this one, coming up with the goal, as he has done in a few qualifiers recently as well. And he did a very good job of keeping Mr. Lewandowski quiet.
He absolutely did. Slovakia came in, as I said before, with this slightly man-oriented defensive approach, and that made it really hard for Robert Lewandowski to actually get on the ball. He had a couple shots in the first half and contributed to other moments in the second half, but every time the ball would come into him, one or two of Slovakia's three center backs would just converge as it came into his area. That could be Lewandowski dropping in, they would step with him. That could be in the box, they would step in, get a foot in, clear the ball away, or they'd step in, get a head on it, and get the ball away. They were sitting deep as well, so it made it hard for Poland to actually make runs in behind, and Lewandowski is not really an off-ball runner in that way anyway, so that was never really a threat for Slovakia. I thought their approach to dealing with him was so solid, as I thought their approach to this game was solid. They weren't dominant necessarily, but the way they sat deep and then attacked in transition, they used Duda and Mac to really provide some creativity out wide. Both of those players had creative moments on the left, even though Duda played mostly on the right. And then you have Hamsik creating and pulling the strings a little bit with that lovely left foot. I thought the recipe worked really well, and it's going to cause the other teams in this group some problems. Although it wouldn't surprise me, based off of how Spain play and how Slovakia approach this game, if Spain had a little bit more success breaking them down than maybe we'd expect.
So Slovakia currently top Group E with 3 points. 3 points on the board at this stage makes it more than likely they're going to go through. Graham, any thoughts on what Slovakia can do in this tournament?
I was quite impressed with them today, I have to say. I wasn't entirely sure what to expect from them, but as you say, 3 points early on the board means that you can relax a little bit. And as I said, and when talking about Scotland, I think 4 points is probably going to be enough to get a lot of teams through. So yeah, they could be a sort of dark horse. And obviously there were stories about how there wasn't much expected of the Slovakia team, and Tarkovic had faced a lot of criticism and a lot of scrutiny from back home. And so I like stories when a team kind of turns it around in a major tournament.
Definitely. Love an upset. Well, we are categorizing this, Taylor, as an upset, aren't we? For sure, right?
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, I think it's an upset that, in retrospect, maybe we could have seen coming more with Milik being injured. I think we all had hesitation about saying Poland were finally going to put it together because we've been burned by them in the past. But I think maybe because I was pretty unfamiliar with Slovakia, I wasn't sure what to expect. And I have to assume that had I watched a lot more of them in preparation for this, I would have known how much more positionally disciplined they were. Because for Haraslin on kind of the right side of the central midfield to be a right winger and a right wing back, sometimes a right center back, but then also a right central midfielder based on whatever the other team was doing in whatever given moment. Like, that level of discipline and awareness is a thing that, in my mind at least, requires a ton of training and repetition so that you get down exactly where you need to be. And so I think if they can continue to impress, because again, I think Sweden, a very different opponent, certainly Spain the same, but I wouldn't be surprised if this team does make a little bit of a run. I also wouldn't be surprised if they finish third in the group. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I would say if you were forcing my hand, I would say I would be confident if I were a fan of Slovakia. If I were Ryan's bejorted imaginary Slovakian friend, I would be feeling pretty good about things right now.
That's soccer McSoccerface, right? That's your friend,
yeah,
Ryan?
Exactly,
soccer McSoccerface?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, except the McSoccerface family, they're very well known in Bratislava. I don't know if you knew that, Joe, but there we are. Well,
I do know.
They are certainly dancing on the streets of Bratislava tonight after that one, and they are in a very good position with Sweden coming up next on the 18th. Spain will be taking on Poland in their second game. Let's talk about Sweden's first game against Spain right after these messages.
This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs, who would like to remind you when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. You don't want to end up with Ryan, Graham, and Joe. Just kidding. Just kidding. Very much just kidding. Because I was very fortunate to have the three of them all join the show. And I had existing relationships with all three of them that allowed me to know that they could handle the amount of work that would be required, that they could be diligent in their tasks and be very effective on mic. And all three of them are. But again, that's because you have the existing relationship. If you don't feel like you have that with potential hires, then LinkedIn is going to make it very, very easy, and they're going to make it feel like you're connected to that person. They have a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire because it gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. But when you are setting the requirements and making it very specific as to what you're looking for, you can very quickly narrow it down to find the right candidate for that position. Hiring is easy when you have that many candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring, and you can too. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/TSS. That's linkedin.com/TSS to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Thank you very much to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's episode.
Total Soccer Show! Did you miss us? We're back! We're here to talk about Spain against Sweden. This one finishing tied at zeros, as I love to say. This one was in Seville. It was supposed to be in Bilbao. Now the game wasn't in its intended stadium today. 90 degrees, Joe. 90 degrees. Actually, almost quite hot in this one. How did you feel about the temperature here?
How would they ever bear it, Ryan? How will they ever make it through? I'm just glad that everyone did make it out of that sweltering heat. Genuinely.
Funny how the Spanish haven't been complaining about the heat as much as the English have been.
That's because Luis Enrique was sitting on an ice box for the whole match.
So Enrique doing his best Bielsa, certainly in terms of sitting on the ice box, maybe not so much in terms of what was happening on the field, though. I characterized this game on my social medias and in our TSS WhatsApp chat as quite boring. Taylor, have I characterized this game correctly? Did you find any interesting moments in this? Am I just being a Luddite?
You're not, but I will say I found the first half genuinely really, really interesting to the point of almost being fascinating. The second half, very much the opposite. I think the first half, because Spain, I think, had lots of little nuances. The one that I kind of like thought was pretty interesting right away was Koke almost on the right side of central midfield, almost becoming a right back at times when Spain were in possession, and that allowed Llorente to go very far up the pitch. That allowed Ferran Torres on the right to then go central, and there were clearly choreographed rotations to this, because as Koke would do that, you could just see everybody rotating around, and I think Spain was designed to just have those rotations, have the movement, and really pull Sweden apart. And for the opening minutes, it felt like they were going to do that. They were just so ball dominant, and it's one of those strange situations of when it's the case in the first 15 minutes, but then also the next 15 minutes, and then also the third 15 minutes of the first half, you start to think, ugh, is this Spain being dominant, or is this Spain not really having a way through Sweden, who, as I tweeted, I found equally fascinating because of how disciplined they were defensively, that anytime, I don't think I'll be able to describe this in audio format, and I probably didn't either in written format, but when you see players moving in sync, and I don't mean like, oh yeah, they're running backwards, like when you see them running in the same, like right foot, left foot, and then turning at the exact same moment, and then shuffling over to one side in the exact same way, you see the defensive discipline there. Scotland, take some notes. And I think that also really interesting to me, and how just Sweden had everything so drilled and figured out with what they wanted to do, that I felt like, okay, we're poised for a second half. Spain are going to have to try different things. Sweden are maybe going to be a bit more confident in their counterattacking. Let's see how this goes. And I think Sweden did get some decent counterattacking opportunities, obviously didn't score them. Spain, for their part, I didn't see them figure much out or try that much different. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe that was my boredom there as well. But I felt like first half really interesting for the reasons I've mentioned. Second half, less so.
Graham, Spain finishing the game with 85% possession. They made 917 passes compared to Sweden's 161. They had an XG of 2.47. Is it? I just can't fathom a world where we call this a good Spain performance.
Yeah, to be honest, I am with you on that. I don't mean to be abrasive in any way, but there's no amount of kind of footballing mental gymnastics that will persuade me that this was a good performance by Spain. I just never really felt like the breakthrough was coming. I think maybe the one exception would be when Gerard Moreno comes off the bench, who, by the way, has to start the next game. I cannot believe that Alvaro Morata started this match. I watched Spain's warm-up game against Portugal, which really seemed to be a match where Luis Enrique was testing out his team for that first game. Alvaro Morata had a terrible performance in that game against Portugal, missed a hatful of chances, and I cannot believe Luis Enrique watched that and went, I'll have more of that, please, when it actually matters, because Morata missed at least one golden opportunity, two or three half chances as well. And it wasn't really until Gerard Moreno came on. And one of the biggest things he did was And this was someone on Twitter that pointed this out in their analysis. But Gerard Moreno was pushing back the Swedish central defenders. And so that was keeping Jordi Alba onside down the left side. And so what you saw in the final 50 minutes was Pedri playing balls through to Alba down that left side, getting to the byline and just creating a little bit more chaos in that Swedish back line. But I think Moreno has to start next time because, for me, this was a pretty passive performance by Spain. One thing I would mention maybe as a factor was this is a Spain team that only had 2 days of training before this game due to self-isolation. And so I just wonder if this level of this extreme level of possession from Spain, where they had 85% of possession, which is the highest share of possession registered by a team in any Euros match since 1980. After the first 5 minutes, Sweden's share of the possession was 0%. They hadn't had a touch of the ball in the first 5 minutes. So I do wonder if maybe that was almost a little bit of a, I don't know if this is the right term, but a defence mechanism to mask some of the fatigue factors that Luis Enrique was maybe anticipating due to that lack of training. And we maybe saw some of that fatigue in the second half where it felt like some of the tempo and intensity dropped in their play.
Well,
Graham,
over here
in the States, sorry, Ryan, Taylor Twellman had an interesting point, one I think I agree with. In the 38th minute, Alvaro Morata has that very, very good opportunity because Danielson misreads the ball. Morata's in on goal 1v1. Credit to Robin Olsen, who comes off his line and had a very good game, I think was one of Sweden's most important players. But Morata puts that wide, and Twellman at that point made the argument that if that's Fernando Torres in 2008 or 2010, that ball is in the back of the net, and that's sort of what this Spain team needs, is that reliable goal threat that will both be intimidating to defenses but also back that up by actually scoring goals. I would almost argue, like, if you put Robert Lewandowski on this team, do you think they win this game?
Yeah, probably, because I think Lewandowski scores that one chance that Morata has, which comes from a Swedish mistake. But Spain did win the Euros in, what was the one where they didn't play, 2012?
Yeah.
Is it? They didn't really
play.
Yeah,
they won too, so.
Yeah, and so I guess they can do it, but what I would say is maybe they had more goal-scoring midfielders at that time. I'm not entirely sure. As good as Pedri is, he's not really a goal scorer. Ferran Torres, I guess, can score goals, and actually he's much more of a goal scorer for Spain than he is for City. One player that I would say in terms of attacking productivity that I feel like Spain need Llorente, the attacking midfielder, more than they need Llorente, the right back. And so that would be a change that I would make. I know they're weak in that position and Llorente can do a decent job there, but I would be putting maybe Azpilicueta in there for the next game and getting Llorente up forward just because his numbers for Atleti are so fantastic. I mean, double figures in goals and assists for Atleti this season. I feel like Spain could use a bit of that.
So many Llorentes in so little time.
I'm just going to keep interrupting, Ryan. I apologize.
Please
to your
do.
Point, Spain in the final of 2012, David Silva, Jordi Alba, Fernando Torres, and Juan Mata were your goal scorers in that game with the midfield of Fabregas, Xabi Alonso, Busquets, and Xavi. So yeah, a pretty good midfield there. That definitely helped them as well. Iniesta and David Silva started up top in that game. So maybe that shows us that you don't always have to have proven goal scorers if you've got a ton of very good goal scoring midfielders. You're right, Graham.
That doesn't quite explain why Thiago was brought on just after the hour instead of their best striker, though. I kind of agree with Graham.
More passing.
And it was also Fabian Ruiz as well with about 5 minutes to go. I think Koke comes off and I'm thinking, right, here goes Adama Traore down the wing or someone. Oh, no, wait, it's Fabian Ruiz, another pass master midfielder.
Joe, let's talk about Sweden a little bit. 4-4-2, low block. Poophousery all around.
Yeah, I mean, they were delaying, they were time-wasting in the 21st minute, or you know, shortly after that. It was halfway through the first half. They were already just counting down the seconds. And fair play to them, right? We talked about on this show how Sweden's style can be very effective, and we saw that in this game. Sure, Spain created chances, and I think, once again, I'm a little higher on Spain than at least some of you guys. But still, Sweden got the job done. They defended in that 4-4-2 block. They made life very difficult for Spain. They didn't allow a ton of space in behind. They didn't have a ton of space between their lines. They play as a unit, and that's so hard to break down in any real soccer competition, but especially in a tournament where the prep is different. You're you know, getting ready for the games. Things are different, and the approach can be different at times. Sweden played very, very well. The one thing that I think they struggled with, and I'm sure they'll take this trade-off, is is they had some Turkey vibes to me in that Italy game, the opener of this tournament, where they're just sitting so deep, they can barely threaten in the attack. And they did have a couple moments where they threatened, the biggest one I think being in the 61st minute, where Isak then gets into the box and squares it over and Sweden can't finish. But they didn't create a ton of transition opportunities, which is a pretty natural result of defending so deep. It's hard to find the balance between those things, and they didn't really in this game against Spain. Again, understandable, but I think they're going to need to as they approach the final two games of their group stage.
So are you expecting a slightly different approach then in these final two games, Joe?
Not a different approach. I'd expect the same 4-4-2 block, but a bigger emphasis, maybe defending slightly higher, and then a bigger emphasis on finding Isak, finding Berger, whoever else is partnering him in that front two, between the lines. Because what Spain did in this game, in the first half especially, is as soon as the ball was turned over from their possession, they would swarm the ball on counterpress. There would be 5, 6, 7, 8 bodies around Sweden as they tried to counterattack. And it took Sweden until the second half for them to be able to actually play through that counter pressure a little bit, find Isak, find Berg between the lines behind Spain's mass of counter pressing players, and then get out in transition in front of the center backs and run at the back line. I think they need a bigger emphasis on those kind of transition moments going forward.
I think, Joe, you have talked me into feeling more positive about both of these teams and their chances in this competition.
They're both good. I genuinely think they're both good.
And I think Spain, I've kind of forgot about the counter-pressing, even though I think I messaged you all to say that if they score, I think it's going to be from a counter-press, because it was just so disruptive and is a big reason why Sweden couldn't get anything going in the first half. And I think some of their game plan was rooted in, let's score an early goal, really kind of blitz them, get this goal, and then we can sort of keep the ball, keep it moving. Maybe we'll get a few more as they get stretched. And that wasn't the case. But I think if they are able to convert that against maybe a slightly more less defensive team, they're going to have more joy. And then for Sweden, I think you're right that they sat very deep. But that was almost, again, what I saw as being part of how they were dealing with what Spain wanted to do. Because obviously, if you have Jordi Alba on one side, if you have Llorente on the other, and with some of the overloads we've already talked about, especially on that left, when Jordi Alba would get in there and combine, what I saw was Sweden, as soon as they felt like they had been bypassed or exposed, or there was an unfavorable numerical situation out wide, they just collapsed because they knew that cutback was coming. They knew that low cross was coming. And so they just immediately collapsed to the 6-yard box, to the penalty spot, and cut that ball out. I think against a maybe less possession-oriented, threatening team, I think you're right, Joe, they probably push out a little bit more. It's more of a mid-block. Same rough shape, but I think they will be able to do some things, especially if Isak takes the chances or is maybe a little more selfish in front of goal and just doesn't look to square to Berg, who I guess just wanted to watch Isak do things. So I think both of these teams are in a stronger position than I would have thought they were at the end of regulation.
Why did Isak come off?
I don't know.
You're providing too much goal threat. Off you come.
It's got to be minute management, right? Yeah. You have two more games. You're likely going to earn that draw. Spain hadn't been creating much of anything when he comes off. And so you say, all right, we're gonna bank on other forwards being able to run and track and chase defensively. We're going to save Isak and Berg for the next two group stage games.
Well, I personally never want to think about this game again, but I'm glad that you guys drew some interesting notes from it. And it certainly will be intriguing to see these two games, how they progress through the next two games. I think that just about wraps up our look at these games today. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Before we head off, though, a quick look at Tuesday's encounters. We have one group left to talk about. Group F, group of death, baby. Hungary versus Portugal, the first game up, Taylor. Tasty stuff? Yum, yum.
I don't know, because Hungary? I did not do the Hungary previewing, and I was pretty down on them. But I'm guessing we're going to get something approximating what we saw in Sweden versus Spain. But people who are more in the know about either of these teams are welcome to agree or disagree, and I will be quiet.
Graham, I think you covered Hungary, did you?
Yeah, I did do Hungary. I think they'll be competitive, but I think Portugal will be, as you would expect, the dominant side. Although I'm just Googling about Joao Cancelo, because I saw that he tested positive for COVID. Is he out of the tournament then? Entirely?
I think so, because I believe I saw they called in Nelson Semedo.
So apparently he's been replaced by Diogo Dalot, which is...
Oh, yeah, you're right, my bad. Semedo will start.
That's a downgrade. and Cancelo's just so important to the way Portugal play, almost in a sort of... A Kieran Tierney way? Am I allowed to make that comparison? But
yes.
When I watched Portugal in some of the warm-up games, so much of their play was about getting Cancelo to the byline and cutting back, so... that's a massive loss for them. But I still expect Portugal to get through that game.
As evidenced in that their last friendly 4-0 win over Israel, I think he had at least a goal and an assist. He might have had another assist as well.
Yeah,
I forget.
I watched that game and he was brilliant, yeah.
Pretty good performance for him. Pretty good performance.
Joe Lowry, you will be relieved on the West Coast not to have a 6 a.m. wake-up tomorrow, and you'll be even more relieved to have probably the biggest box office game of the group stage coming up, France against Germany. Your thoughts on that one?
I'm so excited not to get up early. I'm also so excited for that France-Germany game. I'm looking forward to seeing Mbappe run at Germany's back line, whether that's a back four or a back three. I think he has speed to cause them some real problems in that area. But then Germany also have quality to break France down. I don't expect France to play Sweden-ish by any stretch of the imagination, but Germany will have a lot of the ball. And I'm curious and excited to see how they're going to use the ball to break through France's defensive line.
Graham, who's going to win that game and why is it France?
you beat me to it. Yeah, I think France. I'm just really looking forward to hopefully seeing that front line with Benzema. Benzema's fit, right? I know he picked up a knock in one of the warm-up games, but I think he's fit. I'm looking forward to seeing how they play it, and I'm also looking forward to seeing how Luis Enrique steals one of the forwards that France aren't using, just like he stole one of their central defenders. So Wissam Ben Yedder, he could maybe be playing for Spain in the next game. They could use our centre forward if he's not getting used.
Who will be stolen next? The mystery continues. Taylor, your thoughts on France against Germany? Obviously a huge game. I'm hoping we get some little hints of French implosion. We've seen Mbappe talking about Giroud and whatnot coming up at the moment. Come on, let's have a mutiny. Mutiny.
You've made me a believer in that one. And I do, it is partially why I don't have France going as far in this one, because it seems like a possibility. What I would say is also anything seems like a possibility from this game. I was really excited for the Scotland game today, I will admit. But this might be the second most excited I've been about a game in this competition because I have no idea what it's going to look like. France, in their victorious World Cup campaign in 2018, started off with a 2-1 win over Australia. I think there was a penalty in there. I believe there was an own goal. Then they have a narrow win over Peru. They have a draw with Denmark in the group stage. And there is some speculation that, like, Didier Deschamps can't figure it out. And I feel like that speculation persists even after they kind of win the World Cup. They're still like, yeah, but did he really figure it out, or are they just very good? And so I won't be surprised if this one is very slow, because I think Germany would prefer it to be a slow possession-oriented game. I won't be surprised if both teams come out and try to blitz the other one and we get a back-and-forth high-tempo affair. I think the first 30 minutes will be really interesting in what sort of tempo is established, what the patterns of play are going to be, and then we'll see how the game evolves from there. But I think anything really could happen. I won't be surprised if it's a win for Germany. I won't be surprised if it's a big win for France. And I won't be surprised if it's a 0-0 draw. I think anything is on the table.
Anything is on the table except surprises for Taylor Rockwell, because he's not going to be surprised by any event that happens on Tuesday's action. Thank you very much, gents. Euro 2020 will continue, as I say, on Tuesday. Your favourite DSS boys will be back on Tuesday evening to discuss those games too. In the meantime, Taylor Rockwell, thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend. And again, best wishes to your made-up Slovakian friend.
Thank you very much. Joe Lowry, congratulations on the lay-in tomorrow morning.
Thank you, sir. I really, truly, with all of my heart, appreciate that.
And Graham Ruthven, chin up, son.
Thanks, Ryan. I'll try. We'll be back for Friday.
Graham, can we get your continuous updates on the job site? Like, I would like to know what the mood is on the job site tomorrow. Are people angry? Is it still subdued?
Extra loud.
Yeah, I want to know how it gets picked up in time for the England game.
More
we need
hammering.
These updates.
Yeah, I'm expecting more hammering much earlier tomorrow. Yeah.
That's what she said. Bye!